London Daily Mail, July 23, 1925 Explosion Riddle Mystery of a Boy's Wounds. Injured by a mysterious explosion, which occurred in his mother's house, at River Hall Street, South Lambeth, SW, yesterday morning, Charlie Orchard, 5, was conveyed to hospital in a serious condition. He was hurt on the face and chest, and some of his fingers were blown away. His mother had just called him to breakfast when the explosion occurred. Neighbors who heard the report of the explosion thought there was an outbreak of fire and summoned the fire brigade. An all-day search failed to discover the cause of the explosion. The London newspapers, September 26, 1910, told of a tremendous, unexplained explosion in a house in Willesden, London. I take from the local newspaper, the Willesden Chronicle, September 30, a fire of a most mysterious character. Absolutely no cause can be assigned for the outbreak, which was followed by a terrific explosion, completely wrecking the premises. But in no account is it made clear that first there was a fire, and that the explosion followed. A policeman, standing on a nearby corner, saw this house, 71 Walm Lane, Willesden, flame and burst apart. Windows and doors in the back of the house were blown a distance of 60 feet. On examination of the premises, it was found that the two gas meters under the stairs had been shut off, so it was evident that the explosion was not caused by gas. Representatives of the Salvage Corps and of the Home Office investigated, but could conclude nothing except that chemicals, or petrol, might have exploded. The occupants of this house, named Rees, were out of town, weekending. Mr. Rees was communicated with, and it was his statement that there had been nothing in the house that could have exploded. Willesden Chronicle, October 7 Mystery cleared up. A charred sofa in the drawing room and other evidence reveal the cause of the outbreak. Before leaving the house, Saturday morning, September 24, Mr. Rees, while smoking a pipe, had leaned over the sofa, and sparks from his pipe had fallen upon it. For 36 hours a fire, so caused, had smoldered, before bursting into flames. There were two standard spirit lamps in the room. In the fire, they must have exploded simultaneously. The writer of this explanation picked the remains of a sofa out of a wreck of charred furniture. He leaned Rees over the sofa, because that would make his explanation work out as it should work out. Rees made no such statement, and he was not quoted. The explosion of two spirit lamps could do much damage, but this explosion was tremendous. The house was wrecked. The walls that remained standing were in such a toppling condition that the ruins were roped off. The jagged walls of this wrecked house are more of our protrusions from vacancy. We visualize them in an environment of blankness. Somewhere there may have been a witch or a wizard. Upon June 13, 1885, a resident of Pondicherry, Madras, India, was sitting in a closed room, when a mist appeared near him. At the same time there was a violent explosion. This man, M. André, sent an account to the French Academy. I take from a report, in L'Astronomy, 1886-310. M. André tried to explain in conventional terms, mentioning that at the time the weather was semi-stormy, and that an hour later rain fell heavily. In times still farther back, the mist would have been told of, as the partly materialized form of an enemy, who had expressed his malices explosively. In times, still somewhere in the future, this may seem the most likely explanation. Or the mist was something like the partly visible smoking fuse of an invisible bomb that had been discharged by a distant witch or wizard. And that does not seem to me to be much more of a marvel than would be somebody's ability to blow up a quantity of dynamite, though at a distance, and with no connecting wires. In the New York Herald Tribune, November 29, 1931, there is an account of the doings of Kurt Schimkhus, of Berlin, who had arrived, in Chicago, to demonstrate his ability to discharge, from a distance, explosives, by means of what he called his anti-war rays. According to reports from Germany, Schimkhus had so exploded submarine mines and stores of buried cartridges. Herr Skimkes will have success and renown, I think. He knows that nothing great and noble and of benefit to mankind has ever been accomplished without much lubrication. He announced that slaughter was far removed from his visions, that he was an agency for peace on earth and goodwill to man, because by exploding an enemy's munitions, with his anti-war rays, he would make war impossible. Innocently, myself, I speculate upon the possible use of psychic bombs, in blowing up tree stumps, in the cause of new pastures. In the New York Herald Tribune, March 25, 1931, there is a story of an explosion that may have been set off by rays that at present are not understood. It is the story of the explosion that wrecked the sealing ship, Viking, off Horse Island, north of New Brunswick. It reminds me of the woman, who, in the New York hotel, feared fire. This ship was upon a moving picture expedition. Varick Frissell, film producer, aboard this vessel, started to think of the kegs of powder aboard, and he became apprehensive. He started to make a warning sign to hang on the door of the powder room. Just then the ship blew up. New York Herald Tribune, December 13, 1931. An account of disasters to two wives of a man not a datum of his relations, or former relations, with anybody else. In the year 1924, illness was upon the wife of W. A. Baker, an oil man, who lived in Pasadena, California. It was said that her affliction was cancer. She was found, hanged, in her home. It was said that despondency had driven her to suicide. In the year 1926, Baker married again. Upon the night of December 12, 1931, there was an explosion, somewhere under the bed of the second Mrs. Baker, or in the room underneath. The bed was hurled to the ceiling, and Mrs. Baker was killed. It was a tremendous explosion, but nobody else in the house was harmed. Bomb experts investigated. They concluded that no known explosive had been used. They said that there had been no escape of gas. The full force of the explosion seemed concentrated almost beneath Mrs. Baker's room. In the years 1921-22, and early in the year 1923, there were, in England and other countries, explosions of coal such as had never occurred before. There was a violent explosion in a grate in a house in Guildford, near London, which killed a woman, and knocked down walls of the house, London Daily News, September 16, 1921. There were other explosions of coal, during this year, but in 1922 attention was attracted by many instances. In this period there was much disaffection among British coal miners. There was a suspicion that miners were mixing dynamite into coal. But, whether we think that the miners had anything to do with these explosions, or not, suspicions against them, in England, were checked by the circumstances that no case of the finding of dynamite in coal was reported, and that there were no explosions of coal in the rough processes of shipments. There came reports from France. Then stoves, in which was burned British coal, were blowing up in France, Belgium, and Switzerland. The climax came about the 1st of January, 1923, when in one day there were several of these explosions in Paris, and explosions in three towns in England. About the 1st of January, 1921, Mr. T. S. Frost, of 8 Ferrystone Road, Hornsey, London, bought a load of coal. In his home were three children, Gordon, Bertie, and Muriel. I take data from the London newspapers, but especially from the local newspapers, the Hornsey Journal, and the North Middlesex Chronicle. In the grates of this house, coal exploded. Also, coal in buckets exploded. A policeman was called in. He made his report upon coal that not only exploded, but hopped out of grates, and sauntered along floors, so remarkable that an inspector of police investigated. According to a newspaper, it was this inspector's statement that he had picked up a piece of coal, which had broken into three parts, and had then vanished from his hands. It was said that burning coals leaped from grates, and fell in showers in other rooms, having passed through walls, without leaving signs of this passage. Flat irons, coal buckets, other objects danced. Ornaments were dislodged, but fell to the floor without breaking. A pot on a tripod swung, though nobody was near it. The phenomena occurred in the presence of one of the boys, especially, and sometimes in the presence of the other boy. There has been no poltergeist case better investigated. I know of no denial of the phenomena by any investigator. One of the witnesses was the Reverend A. L. Gardner, vicar of St. Gabriel's, Wood Green, London. There can be no doubt of the phenomena. I have seen them, myself. Another witness was Dr. Herbert Leimerle, of Hornsey. Dr. Leimerle told of a clock that mysteriously vanished. Upon the 8th of May, a public meeting was held in Hornsey, to discuss the phenomena. In the newspapers there was a tendency to explain it all as mischief by the children of this household. The child, Muriel, terrified by the doings, died upon April 1st. The boy, Gordon, frightened into a nervous breakdown, was taken to the Lewisham Hospital. The coal in all these cases was coal from British coal mines. The newspapers that told of these explosions told of the bitterness and vengefulness of British coal miners, enraged by hardships and reduced wages, uncommon in even their harsh experiences. Or see back. There's a shout of vengefulness, in Hyde Park, London far away, in Gloucestershire, an ancient mansion bursts into flames. 16. But why this everlasting attempt to solve something, whereas it is our acceptance that, in a final sense, there is, in phenomenal affairs, nothing, or that there is only the state of something nothing so that all problems are only soluble-insoluble or that most of the social problems we have, today, were at one time conceived of as solutions of preceding problems or that every Moses leads his people out of Egypt into perhaps a damn sight worse promised lands of watered milk and much adulterated honey so why these everlasting attempts to solve something?